I learned a bunch from a neat article by Professor Siegel, who did a historical review of cases from the 19th century, sort of examining whether it was proper to essentially to incorporate the First Amendment into the 14th Amendment. And what he was looking at was specific to defamatory speech, but he's looking at state cases and state constitutions and came up with the conclusion that, look, this rule that we'll talk about more later, the rule that prevents the enjoining of defamatory speech, the idea that that's unconstitutional, was actually well established by the time the 14th Amendment was enacted. And that was well established and recognized in states, both in case law and in constitutions. And you'll see that in the Texas Constitution, right, which was adopted about 9 years later. And the text of the Texas provision on free speech is worth, you know, reading if you're not familiar with it. Every person shall be at liberty to speak, write, or publish his opinions on any subject matter, being responsible for the abuse of that privilege. So the first part really is the Blackstone conception of freedom of speech, right? That anybody can speak, but you're responsible for it, and so you can be punished afterwards. So that's sort of the classic prior restraint conception of free speech. But then the second part, and no law shall ever be passed curtailing the liberty of speech or the press, that's really the First Amendment formulation. And so you can sort of see that the Texas Constitution, and there's a number of constitutions adopted about the same time that have the same language in them, both sort of expressly recognize the two sides of protection of free speech. One is on the substantive side, no law shall be passed. And then sort of on this procedural side, which is no prohibitions against speech until it's been uttered. And, you know, there was a period in the 80s and 90s where there were arguments that these state constitutional protections should really be read broader than the Supreme Court was reading the First Amendment. And sort of the high watermark of that I consider to be the Davenport versus Garcia case, where then Justice Daugust was dealing with a gag order, ruled entirely based on the Texas Constitution. And he was arguing that, look, the Texas Constitution is broader than the First Amendment, citing specifically the language, the Blackstone formulation within our free speech provision. And he says, look, that's the reason for protection of speech. And he says the presumption in all cases under Section 8 is that free speech sanctions or prior restraints are unconstitutional. Now, excuse me, the idea that the Texas free speech provision is broader substantively than the First Amendment really hasn't gained much traction since then. But this part of it, the idea that the Texas Supreme Court or the Texas Constitution is more protective than the federal Constitution when it comes to prior restraints, that has legs, as we'll see in a bit. Typically, if you read about prior restraints, the Neer versus Minnesota case is the starting point. The Supreme Court in Neer versus Minnesota incorporated the First Amendment into the 14th Amendment and held that a state order was a prior restraint. This is kind of neat, and I've been thinking about Neer versus Minnesota in historical terms as well. So what happened? You have in Minnesota, a small radical newspaper is repeatedly criticizing public officials. And the public officials get offended. They sue under the nuisance statute, claiming that this newspaper was malicious, scandalous, and defamatory. And didn't get a ruling that the paper had defamed them, but I got a ruling that the newspaper was a public nuisance. And then under the public nuisance law, suppressed the entire newspaper. And the suppression of the newspaper was upheld by the state Supreme Court. So it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, look, liberty of the press, historically considered and taken up by the federal Constitution, has meant principally, although not exclusively, immunity from previous restraints or censorship. So again, we've got the Blackstone formulation of it, saying that's mostly what the First Amendment is about. And they essentially said, look, this is like a licensing scheme. The government can't go in there and say that an entire newspaper has to be shut down based on some general finding of nuisance. And if you look at the historical context, it's pretty neat because, and maybe how close we were to seeing things go differently in the country, because this is a 5-4 decision in the Supreme Court. So there was one vote would have made a difference where the Supreme Court would have recognized that states have the authority to suppress newspapers. And what else is going on in 1931? So the United States, we're in a depression. Ku Klux Klan is active. The German Bund is active. We've got radical, we've got socialists, we've got communists, we've got labor unrest around the world. You've got Mussolini is in charge in Italy. You've got the Weimar Republic is teetering. You've got Stalin in charge of the Soviet Union. And in the United States, 5-4, our Supreme Court recognized the right or the fact that the government can't be suppressing newspapers. Had that decision gone a different way, 1930s might have come out. Might have looked a whole lot different. If you had a lot of states go around and suppressing unfavorable news reports. So jump 40 years forward, and you got another significant social issue where you got blockbusting going on in around Chicago. And so you've got a fellow who is going around to neighborhoods saying,